If you've got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Welcome to Liberty Watch, an independent program on KVOI, Tucson's voice of freedom. This show is dedicated to the principle of eternal vigilance, based upon the free flow of information about government, technology, current events, and our steadfast Constitution, so that citizens can give informed consent. The bedrock of our republic, and government remains the servant, not the master. Let us each honor the privilege it is to live in God's great nation. Liberty Watch is produced by Charles Heller. The opinions expressed are not endorsed by KVOI, its sponsors, or guests. Welcome to Liberty Watch on AM 1030 KVOI. Today, there is a discussion in the media, and there has been for some time since the Trayvon Martin and the George Zimmerman, the verdict in the George Zimmerman case. I am going to give some perspective to that, and I'm going to juxtapose it with another case in which a woman got sentenced for 20 years in Florida for firing a warning shot. So, and I want to try and explain the law to you so that other people don't fall into the same kind of folly, because you would get something similar. It would be a less severe sentence in Arizona. Nonetheless, what she did in Florida would be illegal in Arizona. And I would venture to guess that virtually everyone who has not taken the concealed weapons class does not know it. And this is from CBS News in Dateline Jacksonville, Florida, updated on July 15, 2013, to reflect more of the testimony of the aftermath of the Zimmerman case. Jacksonville, Florida. A Florida woman who fired warning shots against her allegedly abusive husband has been sentenced to 20 years in prison. Marissa Alexander of Jacksonville had said the state Stand Your Ground law should apply to her because she was defending herself against her allegedly abusive husband when she fired warning shots inside her home in August 2010. She told police it was to escape a brutal beating by her husband, against whom she had already taken out a protective order. CBS affiliate WETV reports that Circuit Judge James Daniel handed down the sentence on Friday. Under Florida's mandatory minimum sentencing requirements, Alexander couldn't receive a lesser sentence, even though she'd never been in trouble with the law before. Judge Daniel said the law did not allow for extenuating or mitigating circumstances to reduce the sentence below a 20-year minimum. I was really crying there, unquote, Melissa Alexander's 11-year-old daughter told WETV, quote, I didn't want to cry in court, but I just felt really hurt. I didn't think this should have been happening, unquote. Alexander was convicted of attempted murder after she rejected a plea deal for a 3-year prison sentence. She said she did not believe she had done anything wrong. And let's see. She was recently denied a new trial after appealing to the judge to reconsider her case based on Florida's controversial Stand Your Ground law. There's nothing controversial about it. 30 states have what is falsely called Stand Your Ground. It's not Stand Your Ground. It's called a no retreat clause in the law. I'll explain that after I'm done reading the article. The law states that the victim of a crime does not have to attempt to run for safety and can immediately retaliate in self-defense. That is a false concept. It is not retaliation, it's prevention. I suppose if you take retaliate in the sense of respond, maybe, but you're not retaliating because of a harm. You're attempting to prevent further harm when you use force or deadly force. And this is what happens when journalists do not understand what they're writing about. I had one come and interview me yesterday for Channel 13, and he is new to the game. And I tried, and I did give him some background, and I explained why it's so important for journalists to do exactly what he was doing, which was digging and getting answers out of the person they're interviewing. But I'm doing this both as an example of what not to do and also of journalistic error when you're reading papers, so you can spot it for yourself. Back to the article. Alexander's case has drawn support from domestic abuse advocates in comparison to the case of neighborhood watch volunteer George Zimmerman, who has claimed self-defense in his fatal shooting of a Florida teenager, Trayvon Martin. According to a sworn deposition taken in November of 2010, Marissa Alexander's husband, Rico Gray, 36, said, that on August 4th, 2010, he and Alexander began fighting after he found text messages to Alexander's first husband on her phone. The two were already estranged, according to her father. Alexander hadn't been living at her mother's home since the birth of the couple's daughter 9 days earlier, and Gray, a long-haul trucker, said he spent the night before in his tractor trailer. Gray began calling her names, saying, "If I can't have you, nobody's going to have you," and blocking her from exiting the bathroom. Alexander pushed against Gray and went into the garage, where she got her gun from her car's glove compartment. Gray told prosecutors in a deposition that Alexander came back into the house holding the weapon and told him to leave. He refused, and what happened next is somewhat unclear. In his deposition, Gray said she shot in the air one time, prompting him and the children to run out the front door. But when Gray called 911 of the incident, he said she aimed the gun at us and she shot. In August 2011, a judge rejected a motion by Alexander's attorney to grant her immunity under the Stand Your Ground law. According to the judge's order, there is insufficient evidence that the defendant reasonably believed that deadly force was needed to prevent death or grave bodily harm to herself, and that the fact is she came back into the home instead of leaving out the front door or back door is inconsistent with a person who is in genuine fear for life. I'm going to stop reading the article at this point for the sake of time, because I want time to explain this. In Arizona, the same standard applies. First of all, let me explain the standard in the use of force. In order to use any physical force against another person, you first have to believe that the threat is two things. Number one, unlawful, and number two, immediate. In the case of that Florida instance that I just read, the threat was not immediate. She went to the garage, got the gun out of the glove compartment of her car, and then re-entered the home and told him to leave. That's not immediate. So number one, it fails on that standard. Number two, it has to be unlawful. Granted that what the guy threatened was unlawful, and he physically tried to bar her from leaving the bathroom, but she was able to squeeze out past him. Therefore, she was not in any immediate danger. So it lacked on both standards. It lacked on unlawfulness, and it lacked on immediacy. That's the first thing. Now we get to deadly force. And I'm giving you a really broad explanation of how of the standards, because I don't have time to do what I would do in the CCW class, which is take a half an hour and go through all the parts of the standards. And even that, a half an hour, is not a great in-depth explanation, but it gives you an overview of what the standard is. The second thing is deadly force. To use deadly force, you'd first have to be justified in using physical force, and the threat against you would have to be one of four things. It would have to be either done in a deadly way, which means like pushing you out a window or off a cliff, done with a deadly instrument, in other words, something that could cause death, be it a rock, a knife, a baseball bat, or a firearm, or any other implement that could be used against you. I mean, you could attack someone with a Cuisinart, and it could be deadly force. And number three is that the attack be done in a way that would cause grave bodily injury. Grave bodily injury is defined as one of four things: either a loss of blood that would cause stitches to stop the blood loss, a grave loss of consciousness, a fracture of a body organ or a body part, or an amputation or incapacitation of a body organ or part. The other standard, the only other time you could use deadly force is if someone tries to remove you from your home against your will, or to remove someone from your home who's under your care, or from your car. Because under the Castle Doctrine expansion in 2006, your castle has been expanded to include your car. Those are the only circumstances under which you can use deadly force. There are 10 enumerated crimes, and they're listed at ARS, Arizona Revised Statutes, Title 13, Part 411. There are 10 enumerated crimes under which you can use deadly force. And in those 10 enumerated crimes, basically they're murder in the first or second degree, manslaughter, kidnapping, rape, child molestation, sex with an underage minor, aggravated assault, armed robbery, arson of an occupied dwelling, and kidnapping and using the person for a hostage. Those are the 10 crimes in Arizona which may justify the use of deadly force. And those are the only times you can use deadly force. Now let me explain using deadly force. Using deadly force means a gun, you've put a gun in your hand. whether you shot somebody or not, if you drew the gun out of the holster, you used deadly force. A prosecutor will review every single use of deadly force. Understand that. I'm going to talk about the standards that a prosecutor will look at in any use of deadly force when I come back from the break, and then I'll explain why you cannot fire a warning shot. I will explain that in depth, and also talk about the laws, the other laws that you may be breaking if you fire a warning shot. On AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice, in the Perfection Auto Work Studios. If you absolutely have a question about something I've said, call in and ask for a clarification. Otherwise, let me just go through this until the bottom of the next segment, and I will give you a clear and concise explanation, albeit brief, of the law. I'm going to invest the last 12 minutes of this segment in talking about that. First of all, we had a call off the air that asked on the definition of aggravated assault. Aggravated assault is any simple assault, such as being punched in the nose, plus any number of aggravating factors. For instance, an assault committed upon a police officer, a fireman, an investigator, a school official, if on or off school grounds, if it's a school function, is automatically raised from simple to aggravated assault. An assault that causes grave bodily injury, in other words, breaks a bone, causes a severe loss of blood, a severe loss of consciousness, or the amputation of a body part or organ, is automatically raised from simple to ag assault. There are a number of other things. If a victim is bound or otherwise has diminished capacity to respond, an assault against them is automatically raised to aggravated assault. There are several other factors. So the only time you can use deadly force against an aggravated assault is when it either, one, is done with a deadly weapon, two, is done in a deadly way, like pushing somebody out a window, three, is done in a way that causes grave bodily injury, and I've already defined that, or four, is done inside your home, and someone from outside your home entered your home in order to commit the assault. Under those circumstances, you can use deadly force as a reasonable person would believe was immediately necessary to prevent the commission or attempted commission of the felony. Now remember, who is the reasonable person? Look around. Look at the person next to you, if there's anyone with you. Look in the mirror. Is that the reasonable person they're talking about? To quote Monty Python, no, it's not. It's a juror. What does it mean if you are meeting the reasonable persons described in Arizona statute? It means you've been indicted. These are the reasonable persons you do not want to meet. So let me further explain, as I started to before the break came in. The standard about what a prosecutor will look at if you use deadly force. Remember, using deadly force does not mean shooting somebody necessarily. It could. But pointing a gun at them legally is the same as is using deadly force, just like shooting them is. Okay, so a prosecutor is going to look at three things: motive, opportunity, and capacity. Motive is a stated intent to do something. It could be verbal, it could be nonverbal. It could be a gesture made to encircle someone's throat and a step towards them. That's motive. It could be the statement, I'm going to kill you. That's motive. It's an expressed intent to do a thing. Opportunity is generally regarded as closeness. Is the person close enough to you to cause physical harm? A person 21 feet away from you with a drawn edged weapon or a blunt force trauma instrument like a baseball bat is a definite deadly threat to you at 21 feet. If you have a concealed gun and they have a drawn baseball bat at 21 feet, they're a deadly threat to you, because the average trained person from concealment can draw and fire a shot or two in 1.86 seconds. It will take him 1.2 to 1.4 to reach you. So you might indeed shoot him, but it will be irrelevant. He'll have already struck you or stabbed you with whatever instrument he or she, probably he, has in his hands. So it's irrelevant whether or not you're armed. It's important only to get off the axis of his attack. If he's coming from north and you're at south, you've got to move either east or west, right? Before you decide what you're going to do about responding to their attack, you got to get out of the way of it. But, so that's opportunity. C is capacity. If a person threatens to do you deadly harm, but they're barely able to stand up, your claim that they could have harmed you, unless they had a shotgun in their hand or something like that, your claim that they were going to harm you may not hold up in front of a jury. So your attacker has to have the motive, opportunity, and capacity to do whatever it is, whatever threat it is, that is both unlawful and an immediate threat to you. Under those circumstances, as a reasonable person would believe, you can threaten or use deadly force against the other person. But remember, any use of deadly force will be reviewed by a prosecutor. Now we get to firing a warning shot. Because of the definition of deadly force being immediately necessary, if you have the time and the discernment to pull out a gun and shoot away from your attacker, by definition, it was not immediate that you used deadly force. Let that sink in a second, guys and gals. If you had the time and the discernment to aim and fire a shot not at your assailant in order to back your assailant down, you didn't need to fire that weapon. Furthermore, if there are other people present, or even your attacker, you could be charged at the very least with felony endangerment because you endangered their life without a threat so immediate that you were authorized to use deadly force. Furthermore, if there's anybody else around, it's an additional endangerment charge against them. On top of that, in Arizona, we have ARS, Arizona Revised Statutes, Title 13, which is the Criminal Code, Part 3107. 3107 is discharge of a firearm within a city limits. If you discharge a firearm within a city limit and you're closer than 1 mile to any occupied structure, and an occupied structure is defined in Arizona as a building which is adapted for human lodging, whether anyone's in it or not, if you're within 1 mile of one of those inside a city limit, you've committed a Class 4 felony. There's 6 classes of felony, with 6 being the least and 1 being the worst. So you have committed, if you fire a warning shot inside a city limit, you've probably committed felony endangerment of the person that you're trying to warn off and anyone else around you. You've probably disturbed the peace using a deadly force instrument, which is a further felony, another Class 6 felony. And you have probably committed aggravated assault. The mandatory minimum for ag assault with a deadly weapon is 4.2 years in the state penitentiary. Got it? It's a Class 4 felony. You could probably get another couple of years for firing a gun within the city limits. And it's an additional felony, probably worth another year in jail for felony endangerment. If the judge got mean and decided to make that consecutive, that's 3 and 4. That's about 7. It's just shy of 7.5 years in the state pen for firing a warning shot. In addition to which, you become a prohibited possessor because you'd be a felon. You could no longer own a gun for the rest of your life. You can no longer vote. Any security clearances you have will be removed from you, and your life will be a wreck from then on. It may be resurrectable. There's a lot of people who, after a serious felony conviction, have put their lives back together. But there's more than haven't. You cannot fire a warning shot. There are some circumstances where you might not get charged for it, but you cannot fire a warning shot. You can also not defend yourself, your dog. Your dog is property. You cannot defend your dog from another dog's attack with deadly force. You can use physical force, but you can't use deadly force. If you attempted to use physical force to get another dog off of you and the other dog threatened you, then you can certainly use physical force. But there's only 4 legal reasons why you can discharge a firearm within a city limit. 1 is in self-defense. 2 is on a range that's connected to a national organization. 3 is if you're in an underground range. And 4 is in licensed pest control. There are some pest control companies that are licensed to eliminate pets and some pests. And so sometimes the only way to do that is by, large supermarkets will sometimes have pigeons fly in, although I noticed they don't do that anymore. They must have some kind of a thing that's electronic thing that's keeping birds out, because I haven't seen it happen lately. But sometimes birds will fly into a supermarket or a big box store, and they'll be flapping around. Well, at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning, there's pest control companies that come in, and they use silenced low-power rifle, 22 short, like that gallery gun that Frank was advertising, although they wouldn't use that. But they use very low-power firearms with silencers. They're almost completely quiet, and they'll take out a pigeon in the middle of the night when it's not going to disturb any of the shoppers. So there are companies licensed to do that. But other than those 4 things, self-defense, practicing on a range that's nationally affiliated, shooting at an underground range, or licensed pest control, or there is another thing. You can discharge a firearm if you have the permission of the chief of police of an area. and you can do that, or you can use blanks, but I wouldn't do that. They'll still accuse you of discharging a weapon in the city limits. They'll prosecute you for obeying the law, even if you're not violating it. If you fire blanks in the city, they'll still charge you, even though that's technically not a crime. But if you have the permission of the chief law enforcement officer, for instance, there's some golf tournaments I've been to where they say it's a shotgun start. And I've said, well, I'll sponsor the shotgun. I won't sponsor a hole, but I'll sponsor the shotgun. And they chuckle and tell me, no, Charles, it's shotgun start is only a term. That means everyone starts at a hole and continues to play instead of all starting at the first hole. And I say, well, that's false advertising. If you're advertising a shotgun start, there should be a shotgun. So I will get permission from a police chief or the sheriff's department to fire a, well, I don't need it if it's not in a city, but if it's in a city, I need the permission of the chief law enforcement officer, and I will sometimes fire a blank to start a shotgun tournament. But that would be an example of an exception. Other than that, you cannot discharge a firearm within a city limit. So those are the reasons why what happened to the lady in Florida happened to the lady in Florida. Now, she got sentenced to 20 years because Florida has a minimum sentencing law. They call it 10-20-30. If you use a deadly weapon in an assault, it's 10 years. If you fire a deadly weapon in an assault in Florida, it's 20 years. And if you shoot somebody with a deadly weapon, it's 30 years. And if you kill them, it's life. That's the way the Florida law works, and that's why the judge had no option in sentencing her. I'm trying to tell you out loud and in the clear, you cannot legally fire a so-called warning shot. That concept, I'm not certain where that concept originated. I know that cops have done it in order to get somebody to stop unlawful behavior, but most departments prohibit it too.